Next program here, we have a very interesting panel of Carol Hand, Roger Levy, and David Hornbeek to share their thoughts and insights on what it'll be like to practice maritime law in a world post-Chevron. Carol and David are both attorneys with Holland & Knight. Carol practices maritime and international trade law from the firm's Richmond office. And prior to joining Holland & Knight, she served as in-house counsel for shipping and logistics companies, as well as counsel to a federal maritime commissioner. Roger hails from California, where he is well known for his work in defending cases involving workplace injuries, especially those arising under the Longshore Act. Roger was a founding partner in his firm, Laughlin, Falbo, Levy, and Morsi, and he now has an active mediation practice. David, again, is with Holland & Knight in their Houston office, and he focuses his practice on commercial litigation across a variety of industries, including energy, insurance, maritime, and offshore. Take it away, y'all.
All right, can everybody hear me? As mentioned, my name is Carol Hand. As an initial matter, I'd like to say I apologize for the weather. I didn't bring it from Richmond, I promise, but I was also not prepared. As mentioned, we're gonna speak today about sort of what the maritime practice areas of maritime practice are going to look like in a post-Chevron world. So while recognizing most of you probably are familiar with Chevron and Loper, we are going to do quick background just to make sure we're all starting on the same page. So starting with, what was Chevron deference? Well, in 1984, the Supreme Court issued a decision in Chevron versus NRDC, and it dealt specifically with the Environmental Protection Agency's definition of a stationary source under the newly amended, at that point, Clean Air Act. So the act was ambiguous as to what a stationary source would mean, and therefore the EPA promulgated some regulations that stated, among other things, that states could adopt a plant-wide definition. So the court accepted their definition as reasonable and, most relevant for us, established a framework for according deference to agency actions. So they created a two-part test. Created a two-part test. So step one is if Congress has directly spoken to an issue in their statute or in the act, then that must be given effect by both the agency and the courts. Unambiguous intent, it is given effect. That's the end of the discussion. However, you get to step two if there is a silent or ambiguous aspect of the statute. And so at that point, then the agency's interpretation is going to receive deference from the courts as long as it's a permissible instruction. So if the agency just sort of goes way off over here, then the court may reel them back in. But otherwise, as long as it's permissible, it will stand and the agency will receive deference. So a really important point of this, which leads later on into Loper, is that the courts cannot simply impose their own construction if the agency has come up with a reasonable interpretation. So bottom line, agencies are supposed to be filling the gaps of their ambiguities in statutes, not courts, particularly because agencies are considered to have, when there's a difficult policy choice, they often have technical expertise. They know their fields, they're administering a statute because they have that expertise, so they should be accorded deference. So thinking about the maritime field that we all practice in, obviously a somewhat unique and complex area, makes sense. So now we're gonna fast forward 40 years, which goes by in a flash. And in 2024, we had Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimundo. Again, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this, decided on June 28th. It was a 6-3 decision. Basic background of this is there were various businesses operating in the Atlantic herring fisheries. They were required to keep a onboard observer to make sure that they were complying with their fisheries management plans. And based on regulations issued by the National Marine Fisheries Service, the businesses were required to pay for those observers. That could be upwards of $710 a day, definitely eats into your bottom line, and the businesses were not happy. As a result, they did challenge that requirement in courts. The district court following Chevron, which you can look and say Chevron was followed and not followed at different stages, but obviously it has been a sort of staunch part of our administrative procedures for the last 40 years. District court said applying Chevron, reasonable, and the government got summary judgment from that. It was appealed to the circuit court. Circuit court again said Chevron deference and affirmed the decision. Supreme Court said this is a great opportunity to look at.